individual that has come face to face with this type of legislation and what's happened in the past, I can only say this, that the way the bill reads here, an individual that's 16 or 17 years of age will be arrested and prosecuted as an adult. Now, we have seen cases in the past where 16, 17-year-olds went out here and they cut throats, they banged heads in, and they've been under the present position, unless they were waived by the court to be tried as adult, when they reach the age of 19, they speak sayonara, they're gone. And we got them to reckon with later on. This bill addresses that they will be arrested and prosecuted as an adult, which means they're going to be tried in adult court. And the argument here on Section J, it's up to the discretion of the judge, what he wants to do about it. That's all fine and dandy with me. But that decision can be made by the judge at his discretion if it's proven that he did not commit an unclassified felony or a Class A felony. I see nothing wrong with this bill, and I think it's a step in the right direction.
Representative Winty?
Since the sponsor did bring up my district, I would try to relate all the debate that's taken place on the floor today to the incident in which I believe he is referring. Ketchikan did have an 8-year-old raped and murdered very near my home when that gal was on her way home from the school that my kids go to. That individual was taken out of our community for trial, and it did go, he was tried as an adult. In fact, I believe the trial was in Sitka. The judge in that instance, and he was convicted as an adult, and essentially what we felt in the community was more than a slap on the wrist, but certainly not a sentence that warranted the nature of the crime for our community. And I guess I'll acknowledge we're not used to that type of crime in my district, as maybe you are in Anchorage, and it does hit home when that type of incident does have. But if the first bill that was on the calendar today were to pass, and that's the relation I want to make if you allow me the latitude, people of my district will not have any say on the judge in Sitka who dealt with the issue on our point. And I want to express to my fellow colleague from Southeast that tempered my vote against the prior bill. But it does relate in the relationship, I think, in the debate going here.
To further debate, Representative Gall.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a question of the previous speaker from Anchorage. I'd like to understand, this point has been brought up, and I just don't quite have it yet. If a person is 16 or 17, is brought up on a Class A or unclassified felony, and if in the determination of the judge, either early in the proceedings or of the jury later, that person is in fact not guilty of that Class A or unclassified felony, but is in fact guilty of some other offense, I'm not sure I understand just how that person is going to be treated. Will he still be stuck in the adult system throughout, or will he then be returned to the juvenile system having a determination, once a determination is made, that he is not in fact guilty of either of the two types of crimes which would require that he be treated as an adult?
Representative Clarkson?
That's, of course, the point of the amendment that I had offered. If you look on page 1, lines 26, 27 in there, if the person is convicted of a lesser-included offense, they must be sentenced under the provisions of this chapter, which are the provisions relating to adult sentencing.
Representative Gall?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Maybe I will sit down and let the gentleman who just stood up answer as well, because obviously the votes are not here to bring us back to second reading, but this seems to be a contradiction in the law to me. It seems very appropriate that people guilty of certain of these heinous crimes should be separated from other juveniles. There are certainly problems with incarcerating young people with adults, but those are apparently not being addressed today. But to take an individual who has been accused of a crime and then acquitted of that crime, or at least not convicted of that crime, and treat him as if he had been convicted of that crime, under this law at least, in terms of his classification as an adult, there seems to be a real problem here, which I believe could bring up challenges later on. I would encourage the body to reconsider the amendment if they have it in their hearts, or if not, at least to consider very carefully the implications of this. I won't belabor the issue by citing examples, but I think it's clear to everyone that there's a difference between being indicted and being convicted. And very often people find themselves, let's say, as an accessory to some sort of a crime that they were originally charged with the commission of. I don't know that those individuals should be treated as adults unless that's the intent of the law, that anybody accused of such a crime should be so treated. But that isn't what it says. It says, for example, in Section C, that if a person has been convicted of the offense, he must be prosecuted as an adult for any subsequent criminal offense. But yet, here we have the same sort of treatment being given to someone who's merely accused. And I would appreciate some defense of this from the sponsor.
President Pestinger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the gentleman from Sitka. Section J is the key to your answer. In our law, we have many mandatory minimum sentences to where if a person commits a certain offense, he has to go to jail for so long. Those are mandatory minimum sentences. What Section J says that a judge, after a man has been convicted of a lesser included offense, that here the judge does not have to apply the mandatory minimum sentence. The judge has absolute discretion, and we do that. We do that to satisfy your concerns. In other words, a man can be convicted of he must be convicted of a crime, and if he's convicted, the judge may give him no jail time. We allow that under Section J. In respect to your point, you brought up another point. You're worried about the placing of these people. We're all worried about the placing of these people. We don't want them placed with fellow juveniles. But we also have, I've considered Statute 4710.130 detention. It says no minor under 18 years of age who is detained pending hearing may be incarcerated in a jail unless assigned to separate quarters so that the minor cannot communicate with or view adult prisoners. If we know the whole law, we realize we've got a good law.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Chairman, the question I'd like to ask is this. Suppose, given a hypothetical, a person is accused of one of these crimes. It's been very definitely established that he was not convicted of one of the crimes that we're talking about here, but was convicted of a lesser crime that's somewhat serious. And under the juvenile sentencing system, would have sent that individual to McLaughlin. It seems to me, as I read this, that that option is not available under Section J. The judge can perhaps put him on probation, let him loose, but that's not quite right because the young person is accused of a crime that he ought to serve some time. He ought to serve some time in an atmosphere in which some rehabilitation can take place. As I read this, the judge has all the options available to him that would be available if the person was an adult. But I don't see in here at all in Section J that he has before him the options that are available to him to treat the person as a juvenile, other than the fact that they can let the kid go scot-free, and maybe that isn't what is best serving society either. I think we're making a terrible mistake in this area with juveniles, and we needn't be making it because I think so many of us really want what's the thrust behind this bill. But I think we're making a grievous mistake in regards to juveniles, because if the judge can't, for instance, send somebody to McLaughlin, and I really don't think he can, then he has to, if he wants to incarcerate the kid, he's got to send him to an adult correction facility. And let's face it, there's no place in an adult correction facility where the kid can be out of sight of adults. That may say that in the law, but in real life, that's not possible. I've taught a couple of college classes out here at the prison out here at Lemon Creek, and it's one of the lesser crowded, lesser congested places. And until we finally got the new facility at the Johnson Center, which I don't think any other community has, and besides that, as a juvenile, he wouldn't be able to be sending them there anyway, it would have been impossible to send a kid out there to the prison here at Lemon Creek without him being within, you know, close proximity and view of older, you know, felons and adults and one thing and another. So I think in this area we're making a terrible error.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's been quite a bit of talk in relation with Section J here on page 3 of this bill. And I think that section there has the latitude that we desire here, because if we look at the conviction records, I understand that last year we had 30-some cases that were tried, of which only 18 received convictions. And of those 18, 5 were put on probation. I think that what the representative from Anchorage is trying to do, or the prime sponsor of this, is to make sure that those people that are accused of such crimes that appear that they should be treated as adults are handled that way, and that we don't have them back on the streets after they reach the age of 18. And I think this is the main concern that we have. Yet we have the latitude to take care of, the judge has the discretion to do other things with some of these young people. There was one reference, Mr. Speaker, to a very tragic case that happened in Ketchikan that referred to a bill that we had before, and if I may have the same latitude, Mr. Speaker, that was a change of venue, which is the right of the accused, with the consultation of that judge in that area, that a fair trial probably could not be conducted there. And so a right of accused tied with the other bill would not be appropriate. Thank you.
Representative Gall.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, I think I'm beginning to understand better the intent here and to feel a little bit better about the bill. The one problem that I still have is the one that was raised by the minority leader. It seems to me that, let's say we get an individual in the court, he's sentenced with a Class A felony, he's charged with Class A felony. It's determined that he was involved, let's say he drove the car, if you will, but he was not involved in beating the woman to death. And yet here he is brought in with these other individuals, charged collectively with this crime, is determined by the courts that, in fact, this person was not really in the same class as the individuals who actually committed the act. Now, the judge has the discretion under Section J, if it's a first offense, to, as the representative from Anchorage said, for example, put him on probation or do any number of things. But as was pointed out by the majority leader, the person cannot be treated any longer as a juvenile. I think this creates a serious problem and might, as I stated before, lead to challenges in the courts. It doesn't seem to me that a person who is not guilty of a Class A felony should be treated under a law which is specifically addressing those people who are guilty of Class A felonies. And I'd like to ask for a brief at ease, please.
The House, please stand at ease. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If we could, I appreciate going back to introduction of guests, please.
Without objection, we'll return to introduction of guests. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce a visitor to Juneau from the state of Washington. She's the sister of the aide to Representative Miller. That's young Miller, Mrs. Jeannie Granberry. Jeannie?
Representative Herman.
Mr. Speaker, under introduction of guests,
yes.
I'd like to also introduce a visitor to our state from the state of Maryland, Representative Tim Maloney. Gallery.
Welcome, Ken. Representative Liska.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It gives me great pleasure in introducing a neighbor of mine, one of my constituents, a member of the Planning Board of Anchorage, City of Anchorage, Dan Kendall.
Is there further debate on the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 109? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 109 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative Duncan?
Yes.
Duncan from yes to no.
I'm getting there.
Clerk may take the roll.
29 yeas, 8 nays.
The Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 109 has passed the House. Sorry.
Here's a letter of intent.
Representative Barnes.
Mr. Speaker, did someone move the letter of intent?
Not yet.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the letter of intent.
There is objection. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I'm just going to object for a comment. I think the original fiscal note on this legislation was about $12 million, which was the estimated number of additional beds that were going to be required in the prisons for the kids that we were going to put into adult prisons. The Finance Committee changed the fiscal note, drastically reduced it, and the letter of intent explains that, gee whiz, we'll fund it sometime in the future. I think that's a mistake, Mr. Speaker, because I think that if we're going to make a firm attack on crime, which is what I assume this legislation is about, we have to be prepared to pay for it. And the cost is without dispute that there will be additional beds and that those additional beds are extremely expensive, and we're learning that now with regard to the corrections budget. I think it's a serious mistake to approve this legislation without the sufficient money to house the people that we're going to put into jail and into prisons because of the legislation.
Representative Adams?
I'm going to withdraw my objection because the letter of intent has been approved by the Finance Committee and is on its way, but I just wanted to express some concerns about what we're doing.
Is there further objection to the adoption of the letter of intent? Hearing none, the letter of intent is adopted. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar? Representative Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to give notice of reconsideration on my vote on House Bill 109. I realize the majority leader would like to vote on this bill, probably.
Thank you, Representative Duncan. Representative Duncan has given notice of reconsideration for his vote on House Bill 109. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill number 222 by Lindauer, entitled An Act Relating to the Creation of a Program for Stranded Non-Residents. The Judiciary Committee has had House Bill number 221 under consideration, recommends it do pass. Reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Representative Bussell, Chairman. Representative Bussell recommends do pass. Liska, Malone, Clarkson, and Barnes have no recommendation. The Finance Committee has had House Bill number 221 under consideration, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill number 221 Finance with the same title, reports it back with individual recommendations. Report was signed by Representative Adams, Chairman. Ward, Hurlburt, Lindauer, and Bettisworth recommend do pass. Pestinger, Flood, Zharoff, Duncan, Grusendorf, and Adams have no recommendation. Martin recommends do not pass. I have one committee substitute by the Finance Committee on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute finance for House Bill 221 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? There is objection. Representative Clarkson.
Just for the purpose of a question, Mr. Speaker, I've been looking through it trying to figure out what the differences are. I can't find them by comparing the two. Can we have an explanation of the difference in the finance substitute?
Representative Lindauer?
Yes. Mr. Speaker, there is an extremely small difference. The word seek out was removed. It was seek out and find. I can't even remember the words. The word seek out was removed.
Is the objection maintained to the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute in lieu of the original bill? Representative Gall?
What line is that on, please?
Representative Adams?
Yes, that was on page 1, line 15, Mr. Speaker.
Without objection to the motion that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 221 be adopted in lieu of the original bill, the motion is adopted. Does the clerk have an amendment?
I have one amendment on my desk, Mr. Speaker. It's amendment number 1 by Malone. It has revised on the top in two paragraphs. Begins with delete all appearances of the word non-residents.
Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do not intend to move the amendment. I'd ask to be removed from the clerk's desk.
Without objection, the amendment will be removed. Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a question while we're still in second reading. On page 1 of the bill, line 18, let me read it. It says, screen stranded non-residents to be sure that they lack the resources to return to Canada or to the United States. Where are they at when they're in Alaska? I thought we were part of the United States. I guess, my question.
Sorry, Representative Duncan, but the Speaker is not allowed to debate.
Mr. Speaker, maybe I could ask the sponsor of the bill what that means, to return to Canada or to the United States. Where are they at when they're in Alaska?
Representative Lindar?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Obviously, in Alaska, we are, as members of the United States, they are in Alaska and in the United States. I suppose that somewhere along the line, we could have said to someplace else in the United States. However, I don't think anybody thought that was necessary.
Representative Gall?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to inquire of the committee chairman who reviewed this legislation. Was any inquiry made as to what the impact would be on the fiscal note if the state were to include some provision for trying to regain these monies, that is, to collect them from the person once he's been, I believe, deported is the word? It would seem to me that clearly, if we could get the money back at some time, that would be nice, but I understand that the collection procedure might be more costly than the plane fare. I was wondering if I could get some comments on whether or not any research has been done to determine that.
Representative Bussell?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I presume I'm the committee chairman, or at least one of them he's talking about. Someone did bring up that comment about being able to recover the money, and I think he's answered his own question. They decided that the costs of trying to recover any of it would far outweigh the expenses incurred in trying to do just that.
To further debate? We have the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 221 before us in second reading. There are no amendments. Representative Lindar?
Mr. Speaker, I would like to debate the bill and say something about it.
Pardon?
I would like to speak to the bill, please.
Well, we're still in second reading.
Oh, okay.
Representative Barnes? Excuse me, Representative Malone?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I would like to ask a question, and it sort of tied up with the amendment that I was going to propose and withdrew. But I'm not sure what a non-resident is under the legislation. Residency is a matter of debate before this legislature and consideration. What is Alaska residency for various programs? I guess you could define this bill as a program and for non-residents, but I'm not sure what they are. Does it include somebody that's been in the state less than 30 days, somebody who's been in the state less than 6 months, somebody who's been in the state less than a year, or what is the intent on residency, which in a lot of cases is a matter of intent of the individual? Before, I'm sure some amendment should not be offered. I'd like to hear an explanation from someone on that question.
Representative Lindar?
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, a very good question, and I think it may have been answered, and that is the residency is at least substantially an aspect of intent. Someone who intends to leave Alaska is, by their own definition, a non-resident.
Representative Martin?
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Since the gentleman from Kenai didn't enter or withdrew his proposed amendment, I kind of have concerns on the same point. I was going to accept his amendment, but now I think that rather than go to third reading and then discuss and have to return, we must bring this up. I wonder if the gentleman would make the bill on line 15 would consider it a friendly amendment if we add after non-residents or residents, if he says that anybody that desires to suddenly change. We may have that cleared up. It just seems to me discriminating. And maybe someone last year filled out an application for permanent funds or filled out a voter's registration card and just want to be a temporary resident, and now they're wondering how to get out of it and or how to get out of the state. There may be some people in the state who are residents that may want to get out. You know, after this session, I may want to get out. But right. Also in line 19, in questions to the individual, the gentleman from Juneau brought it up, Canada and the other country, United States. And I was wondering if there'd been any correspondence with these foreign countries to ask that they would receive these people. If so, then what about Europe and Asia and other countries?
Is there further debate? We're on unless there's an amendment, we are on in second reading. If you,
I want to like to have brief of these discussion.
House, please stand at ease.
Did you get an amendment?
There is an amendment on the clerk's desk.
Clerk, please read the amendment.
This is Amendment Number 2 by M.A. Miller and Szymanski. It's the same one as the revised amendment by Representative Malone.
Representative Miller?
Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to the adoption of Amendment Number 1.
There is objection. Representative Miller?
Mr. Speaker, the reason I submitted that the amendment that had previously been written by Representative Kenai is this. Under the law as it now stands, I think probably there's probably not too much of a problem because... The definition of stranded non-resident is sufficiently broad that it could probably deal with almost anybody, which is, I think, probably the intent of what we're doing here. However, in the in State Affairs Committee, the committee has been working on residency questions, and I think one of the strong points of the bill that has been crafted there, and I suspect has a very good chance of passing this legislature before we adjourn, is the fact that a resident is very definitely established and defined as a person who's been here 30 days or more. So if that, and then of course it goes on to say that for particular programs such as student loans and one thing or another, you can have additional requirements, but barring special qualifications. That particular bill will very, very stringently, I think, define residency as 30 days or more. That being the case, a non-resident would be, under this bill then, would be pretty definitely, I think, 30 days or less. And I think most of the people that we're talking about here, the people who have arrived with a few bucks but not enough bucks, probably have been here 30 days or more. Very few people come up here without the money to get by at least 30 days. At least that's my impression. I don't have any scientific data on the question, but that's very definitely my impression. Just talking to people who have come up, they've got enough for 60 days or 3 months or maybe 4.5 months in their pocket, and all of a sudden winter's coming, and they really are broke thin. So, Mr. Speaker, even if that other bill doesn't pass, I think the amendment makes sense. But if the other bill does pass, then this, I think... then we have a real problem area. And so in as much as it makes sense both ways, I think that it would accomplish the goal of the legislation if we adopted that language.
Representative Lindauer?
Yep. Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the information regarding the deliberations in the State Affairs Committee, and I understand and appreciate the significance of the bill that they're reporting out, and that will come to this body eventually. And in that spirit, I... would accept this as a friendly amendment, and think that everybody should vote on it as they see fit.
Representative Furness?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to rise in opposition to the amendment. Let me share with this body, as I understand this piece of legislation, it is to address those persons who, for whatever reason, find themselves within a court situation, may find themselves going to the court committing a crime, let's say, with the intentions of, say, drawing upon these funds in order to leave the state. I believe the court will have enough problems trying to interpret it as to what this bill means without clouding the issue by changing this to, say, resident or to put in the place the word person. It's my feeling, Mr. Speaker, that if we're to pass this bill, let's pass it as it is now, because it clearly indicates that if a person comes to Alaska, if that person in turn get involved contrary to the law and ends up in jail, that the courts would at least have an avenue by which to finance a one-way ticket out of the state of Alaska. And if that's the intent of the legislation, I'd say let's leave it as it is and let's not support this particular amendment.
Representative Abood.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the residency bill that is now before the House, I believe, is still in here, it is constitutional for a 30-day resident if one shows intent to become a resident. Now, with these people that we're talking about, the guy can say, I'm here, I couldn't, he's in court, it's been over 30 days, he can very easily say, I have no intent of being a resident. Just having the intent does not give him the residency. He must show other simple residency requirements, such as a driver's license, such as a voting certificate and things. There are other small things that one must do to show intent that he is a resident. Being here 30 days, say he was here 60 days, he could very easily tell the court, I have no intention of being a resident here. I don't have a driver's license. That would show intent if he did have one. So I guess we're kind of caught within a rock and a hard spot, as if to say, is the guy a resident or is the person a resident who has been, ran out of money? Maybe he came up here and he said, by golly, and he had the money to do it. He went down and bought a driver's license, which takes a while to do. He's got that on him. He also decided to vote, and all of a sudden he decided, man, I don't like this country up here. It's not good for me. I just can't handle it. I haven't got any more money. I haven't got a job. I want to go back to Florida where it's warm, where I can at least live. In that case, he would be a resident by all appearances. So I would support this particular amendment because I believe it would cover both ends of the spectrum in the case of showing an intent. Just because a guy comes up here and says, and doesn't have a driver's license, doesn't have a voting card, doesn't have all the simple requirements of a simple residency, if he doesn't have anything, all he's got to say is, well, I don't want to be a resident. I had no intent of being a resident. He isn't a resident, even if he's been up here for 30 days or 60 days. So I think this is a good amendment because I think it'll cover both ends of the spectrum, I say. And so I would vote, I would ask my colleagues to vote for this amendment. It's a very good one if you're pertaining strictly to the residency laws that are on before us now.
Representative Kopanen.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I am glad to see the previous speaker support the amendment, as I do. I think without the amendment, we're closing off programs actually that go on currently without any real base in law, neither being forbidden nor disallowed. And those are not the ones of people who are involved with petty crimes or anything like that, but people who do come up here and do not find employment, become a public burden. In territorial days, many of you remember that as the blue ticket getting sent out of the state. Sourdough, you sour in Alaska and don't have the dough to get out. But this still goes on, and family, people do have families elsewhere who can assist them, and they do come to social services, and they do ask for this kind of assistance. Sometimes there is money for it, more often there is not, because there is no particular fund. But those people have, by the time that they do come to that, qualify as residents. So without this amendment, we would, in effect, be forbidding a program that is going on an informal level, and making these people a continuing charge on the social services in the state at this time. So I commend the maker of the amendment and previous speaker. Thank you.
Representative Herbert.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have a built-in mechanism with which to define residents and non-residents for the purpose of this bill anyway. Residents that want to get out will have their permanent fund dividend for the next several years so that they can use it to ship their own way out, and I think that's kind of a way to get out from under this, and all the non-residents will pay their way on out.
Representative Liska.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The question I have in this is, how do we have a stranded resident within a state? Maybe I'm missing something here. Now, where is he stranded from? Kotzebue, Nome, or... someplace else. I mean, I don't think we're addressing the true... Maybe through the chair, the sponsor can answer my question. I don't get it.
Representative Lindauer?
Yes, I would go back. I have not participated, Mr. Speaker, in the deliberations of state affairs, and I understand and I more and more appreciate what they're doing and the significance thereof. In the past, as I have understood residents, and I believe as the committees that dealt with this have understood residents, it was strongly a matter of intent, and that someone who proclaimed that they did not intend to stay in Alaska proclaimed that they had a residency elsewhere. If they didn't think they were residents, why should we think they were residents, I guess was the theory.
Representative Szymanski?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I believe the distinguished representative from Sleep Mute touched on an excellent point here, and it's one of the reasons that I support this amendment, in that I can see tens of thousands of people coming to Alaska establishing residency to obtain that permanent fund dividend check of $350, and then go down and get a hotel room, get a rude awakening, and find out they don't have a way to get back home off vacation. So I can see the distinguished representative from Sleep Mute shares my concern in this area, and I know that he'll be joining me in further legislation to address the problem as well.
Representative Bussell?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is presently working for the member that had the question about stranded resident. There is present in existence and working right here in the city of Juneau a program to take stranded residents back to their home. There's a system that's working in Anchorage to take stranded residents in the city of Anchorage back to their homes in Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Question. Representative Herman?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Through the chair, I'd like to know how much money is put into that rural stranded residents program.
I'm under the impression that he doesn't know. Representative Winty?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess if the amendment passes and if we could get an immediate effective date on it and some concurrence with the Senate, I have a reservation at 140. But as you know, the state's already paying for that. But I did miss one of the hearings in the Judiciary Committee, hearings on this bill, and I would appreciate the advice of the senior member from downtown Anchorage on his position on this bill and whether he would advise the members on the basis of that testimony given in the Judiciary hearings on this amendment and on the bill itself.
Representative Flaxen?
Mr. Speaker, we're in second reading. The only issue before us is the amendment, and I support the amendment.
Question. Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there has been much discussion over this particular amendment, but there are, as the Judiciary Chairman said, there was quite a bit of testimony on the resident program that we have, and I do not believe that the amendment is a proper one, so I therefore oppose it.
Representative Miller?
Speaker, I think there's a little misunderstanding of what a stranded resident would be. And, Mr. Speaker, a stranded resident might very well be somebody that's come up here from Little Rock, Arkansas, wanted to become an Alaskan, was here 30 days, registered to vote, registered for his permanent fund dividend or whatever, and then decided that rather than stick it out the 6 months that are required for the permanent fund dividend, and he maybe even got a driver's license, ran out of money and wants desperately now to get back to Little Rock, Arkansas. But absent the amendment, this mechanism is not going to be available to him or her because that person will have cut the ties with the old home country, so to speak, and will have established himself or herself as a resident. And absent the amendment, then we couldn't do what we want to do, which is to assist that person in getting back to his original residency.
Representative McBride.
I have a little question as to we're standing here thinking that resident and non-resident means state resident and non-resident, and we're just assuming that and not knowing where the sections of the statutes are. What if I was, as I am, a resident of Ketchikan and became stranded in Anchorage and I'm going to be sent back to the United States as it states? Would I be eligible to get my way paid back to Ketchikan?
Representative Tischer?
In response to the previous speaker's question, may I answer that? Page 1, line 26, section B. The gentleman would have to get the approval of the Attorney General's office and an endorsement from the judge, magistrate, or police chief. Thank you, sir.
Are ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment number 1 to the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 221? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
18 yeas, 20 nays.
Amendment number 1 has failed. Clerk, please read the next amendment.
Amendment number 2 by Malone, page 1 and 2, delete all appearances of the United States and insert another state.
President Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing none, amendment number 2 is adopted. Clerk, have further amendments. Representative Winty.
Well, in considering another amendment, I would ask the sponsor, and since the debate has indicated everything from Little Rock to Florida, are we really considering buying tickets to Little Rock or Florida, or are we just talking getting them to Seattle or Whitehorse or the first place out of Alaska? What if it's Argentina or God knows where? So I guess to the smile, are we really talking about buying a ticket to anywhere in the world that they need to go, that they were going to call home, or are we just talking the nearest port outside of Alaska?
Representative Lindar?
Well, Mr. Speaker, if we're under debate, I'd like to answer and say
we're under debate for the purpose of, as I understood Representative Windy, he's asking the question in anticipation of a possible amendment, since we're still in second reading. So we just, if you could answer the question, then we'll go from there.
If the representatives would read page 2, if the members of our criminal justice system who are administering this, the attorney general and the judge or police chief, accept a location. It says here on line 3, a mutually acceptable location. That is a location acceptable both to the person requesting it and to the police chief or judge. If the police chief and the attorney general both agree that the best interests of Alaska are served by letting this person go to Arkansas, so be it. It is certainly not for the purpose of arbitrarily saying where they can go. They must go to some place acceptable to our criminal justice system.
Representative Gall?
Yes, I started out feeling pretty positive about this. I'm beginning to have some questions. I was wondering if I could address a couple of those to the sponsor. First of all, I'm wondering what is the federal law governing non-resident aliens, or I suppose that's redundant, governing aliens, who find themselves in the United States without visible means of support. I'm wondering whether they are deportable and whether we should not be turning them over to the federal government as relates to the part about people from out of the United States. And with regards to returning them to a particular state, why is it the responsibility of the state of Alaska to send these people home rather than just get them out of state? I personally think that we are possibly inviting every summer visitor to run out of money and expect a ticket home, and if he wishes to go to the judge rather than the social service agencies, he may just be able to get it. So my questions specifically are, what is the rationale behind the answer that was just given to the last question asked? I understand the answer here, having looked at page 2, but why are we taking it upon ourselves to provide returns on vacations, which is what it begins to look like? And secondly, I'd very much like to know whether an investigation has been conducted to find out what federal responsibilities might be germane to this bill.
Point of parliamentary procedure.
Yes, I'd like to know what we're talking about. Do we have an amendment that we're discussing and under the second reading? Why are we? What are we discussing? Should we be discussing this in the third reading or not?
I'm giving quite a bit of latitude here, which I'm just about to stop. The questions that are being asked are supposed to be preliminary to a possible amendment. And if there, the person wants to make an amendment, I'd suggest they request an at ease and put one on the clerk's desk. Representative Gall?
Mr. Speaker, I'll withdraw my question regarding the federal involvement. I would just like to have the rationale of the sponsor regarding return to another state, whether it be under the phrases provided in the amendment or as it stands right now. For what reason are we... I think it's very humane to take the needs of the person involved into consideration, but it would seem to me that getting that person to Seattle is really all that can be expected of us, and I'd like to know why we're going beyond that.
Representative Lindar?
The purpose, this bill has a number of purposes, including a real effort to reduce crime and reduce state spending, but to be constitutional, the person has to request assistance. And our criminal justice system has to be willing to accept the request. We do not have the right to arbitrarily grab people and place them some undesirable place from their point of view. If they request Seattle, and if the Attorney General and a police chief, for example, were to agree, that would be an agreement, and we could send them there. This is an authorization bill to help people and to reduce crime. It's a criminal justice bill that has a very real humanitarian aspect of breaking into a cycle of crime, reducing state spending by so doing, reducing crime in the state by so doing, and getting people back to where they can perhaps restore their lives to normal things and be no burden on the state. If we cannot reduce the burden on the state by doing this, we obviously will not do it because we'll have police chiefs and attorney generals who would not agree.
The House, please stand at ease. There has been another amendment placed on the clerk's desk. Will the clerk please read amendment number 3?
Amendment number 3 by Winty. Page 2, line 3. Delete all of 9-3 and replace with the following. Of the person's possession to the nearest mutually acceptable location outside Alaska in.
Representative Winty.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent on the amendment. I could, under debate, Mr. Chair, or Mr. Speaker, if the amendment is adopted, it'll read as follows. On page 2, subsection 1, assistance means the most reasonable and least expensive transportation for the stranded non-resident and up to 40 pounds of the person's possessions to the nearest mutually acceptable location outside Alaska in Canada or the United States. I guess, obviously, my intent in the question that I addressed with the latitude you gave me, I guess all that's ruled out in my question is Argentina, but we still want to send or have the ability to send people to Little Rock or Florida or as far away from Alaska as you can get, and most expensively as far away from Alaska as you can get. I suppose if we're going to use the taxpayers' money and there is a need to get these people out of the state so they aren't draining us in terms of welfare or whatever state costs are involved in the arguments that have been given in this bill, that we keep it to the ports of entry that are nearest to Alaska, whether that's Whitehorse or Prince Rupert or Seattle, depending on the mode of transportation. I would certainly hope the sponsor would not object to this amendment and we could get it at least a reasonable approach to the situation.
Representative Bussell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to recall for the memory to the Representative Ketchkan, I don't recall exactly whether he was at the meeting the day we discussed this with the Salvation Army and the group from Alaska Psychopathic Institute, but if I recall their testimony, the APA people were, or API people were talking to us about a number of people that come up here and get involved in minor crimes and get sent out to API, which is overcrowded, understaffed, and they supported this bill unanimously, or wholeheartedly, I don't mean unanimously, wholeheartedly, because it allows them a means to send these people back to their families where a proper cure can be effected wherever that family might be. The Salvation Army people, both at Anchorage and Juneau, testified along those same lines, that anybody that would get into this situation from their point of view would be somebody that really needed to go back home where they belonged, not just to some other port or some other town where they could get into further trouble, just as if we're talking about them getting into here. I think it's vital that the body keep that in mind and remember the people that testified and the people to whom this bill really applies, and try to keep from joking from it. It does provide an outlet to several state agencies that are in dire need of this outlet to service them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further debate on amendment number 3? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt amendment number 3 to the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 221? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
12 yeas, 25 nays.
The House has failed to adopt amendment number 3. Does the clerk have further amendments?
Not at this time.
Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute finance for House Bill 221 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 221, financed by the Finance Committee, an act relating to the creation of a program for stranded non-residents.
Is there debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 221, amended House, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
23 yeas, 14 nays.
The Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 221, amended House, has passed the House. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar? Representative Szymanski?
Yes, I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration, House Bill 221.
Notice of reconsideration has been given by Representative Szymanski for his vote on House Bill 221. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill number 106 by Ward, Jaroff, Flood, Pestinger, Bussell, Hurlburt, Adams, Grusendorf, Cowdery, Furness, Schultz, Liska, and Szymanski. An act relating to Alaska bidder preference.
Bill's before us in third reading. Is there debate? Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to move from third reading to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment.
Will the clerk please read the amendment?
Amendment. Mr. Speaker, if we could have a very short of these, the pages are passing out the amendment and also a brief memo.
The amendment is not on each member's desk.
It's being passed out right now.
We have a motion before us to advance from third to second reading for the purpose of a specific amendment. Amendment number 1. I'm going to ask the clerk to read the amendment. It's not long, and then meanwhile it'll be placed on your desk. Will the clerk please read the amendment?
Amendment number 1 by Davis. Page 1, line 11, following bidders, delete semicolon and insert for non-construction contracts or is not more than 5% higher than the lowest non-residence bidder for construction contracts, including equipment and material purchasers for construction, semicolon and.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move.
There was objection to the motion to return from third to second reading. Do you wish to debate the amendment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. This amendment actually does what the prime sponsor wanted to do with this bill. I raised some concern about earlier about the fact that construction contracts would now fall under the 15% rule. And I know that prime sponsor didn't want that to happen, but what this means with this 15% bidder's preference large major construction projects like Susitna, building the dams around the state, Kinnick Arm Crossing, would also fall under this 15% rule, which, for example, the Tai'i project could go up by approximately $45 million. Also, there's some concern. I talked to legal counsel for the legislature and also with APA, and there was some concern that with this large 15% bidder preference, we'd find that a lot of outside firms wouldn't even bid. And also, there was a concern by several people that what might turn out happening is some of these major construction firms would be setting up shell companies in the state, which would be driving out the real Alaskans trying to bid on these projects. So I don't think the intent of the legislation is to drive up the cost of construction in the state. So I'd urge the adoption of the amendment.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the concerns. I have to rise in opposition going back to second reading for the purpose of this amendment. I don't think that the sponsor of the amendment and myself are separated in our thoughts of what's trying to be accomplished, but I think that the current statutes are quite explicit, and I think that this is not a needed amendment to the bill.
Representative Furness?
Mr. Speaker, I appreciate a brief at ease.
House, please stand at ease. Is there further debate on the motion before us? Are you ready, Representative Duncan?
Mr. Speaker, there's... No, I don't have any debate. Member who's missing right now who wanted to vote on it. Could we have an at ease, or shall I call the House, or what should we do here?
Why don't you call the House?
No, the other one's gone. I'll call the House.
There is a call on the House. Is there further debate on the... I didn't call an at ease, though, just the House. Is there further debate on the question?
Can we have a brief at ease?
House, please stand at ease.